Today we are worshiping in a newer way. Our service is broadcast from our sanctuary, but all the participants, apart from the clergy and staff here this morning, are participating virtually. Thanks to all of you tuning in who let us know that we do not play to empty pews, but speak to you at home. We made plans for this Sunday in response to the coronavirus outbreak that led the governor of Massachusetts to declare a state of emergency here. The ban on public gathering extends well beyond this church, obviously. Boston has canceled its famous St. Patrick's Day parade and postponed its fabled marathon. Public schools have closed for the coming weeks, while area colleges have vacated their dormitories and moved entirely to online instruction. Nursing facilities in the area have suspended family visiting hours. A young couple that had a wedding planned here in just a few weeks moved their wedding date. Broadway shows are canceled and international travel is banned. Circumstances are shifting rapidly as we attempt to slow the spread of this virus. This can feel quite unsettling and upsetting. Much as we would like to do things as we always have, we find that we must now do them in newer ways as novel needs arise, because we want to be prudent. While this change to custom is unprecedented in our living memory, it is not unprecedented in the history of this congregation. In 1918, during a global influenza epidemic, the then minister of UU Wellesley Hills, the Reverend Charles Francis Potter, put up a sign that said, "Church closed. Ignoring disease never was and never will be good religion." His decision to close caused some controversy, but in the end, his proved an eminently reasonable decision. That concern for what he called good religion stayed with Reverend Potter long after the epidemic ended. Later on in his ministry, Reverend Potter would spar with the Fundamentalist Baptists in a series of radio broadcasts from Carnegie Hall on the fallacy of biblical inerrancy and serve as an expert witness for Clarence Darrow in the infamous Scopes Monkey trial, arguing on behalf of teaching evolution in public schools. Reverend Potter thought it important for people to keep pace with emerging knowledge. These days, there seems to be general agreement about that point. For instance, ours is definitely not the only live stream worship service in this area this morning. The sign we just hung on our door was a contemporary variation on the one the Reverend Potter drafted. It says, "Due to public health concerns, our church campus is closed to the public until further notice." Please note that we did not say that the church itself is closed, because it is not. Instead, it remains very active. We have technology at our disposal that people could not have imagined in 1918. We are broadcasting worship services for the next couple of weeks, at least, and holding all the Touchstone groups in our church Zoom room this month. Our caring community members have been calling different people to check on them, and tomorrow the lead of our Bristol Lodge task force will be delivering frozen food that was purchased instead of made to Bristol Lodge guests. Although our rummage sale was called off for the end of March, our co-chairs are looking at auctioning items online. People can donate to the plate collection through our website now. All of us are doing what we can to press on. Our clergy, staff, and key volunteers continue working remotely through this public health crisis, checking their emails and messages and staying responsive. Everyone remains remarkably dedicated to the work at hand. Never have I been prouder of this place and its people, and I was pretty proud at the outset. In the last century, Reverend Potter declared what he considered the religious life, what he considered the essence of the religious life. It involved the embodiment of love at work. It is plain to me that love is rather hard at work here, despite the admittedly frightening situation we face. We are that much stronger for not facing it alone. What matters is that we know we are confronting the same reality as nearly as we understand it. When we are under stress, we are all at risk of letting matters get contentious a bit too quickly. We may be tempted to turn on each other instead of turning toward one another. It's difficult to keep pace, admittedly, with the emerging medical knowledge when misinformation abounds and so much remains unknown as of yet. We all find ourselves at some point along a pretty steep learning curve with high stakes. Almost all our choices seem complicated somehow. Throughout this past year, I've been preaching a sermon series on the spiritual sources of Unitarian Universalism, the living tradition that inspires us to deepen our understanding and expand our vision to include a truly global perspective. Our UUA principles and purposes enumerate 6 different sources, among them humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science, and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. These humanist teachings provided crucial guidance to Reverend Potter during his time here at UU Wellesley Hills and long past his departure. Raised a Baptist, Reverend Potter was licensed to preach as a teenager. As he completed his theological education, he recognized his own beliefs as Unitarian and began serving UU congregations in Canada and the United States. After he retired from the UU ministry, he founded the First Humanist Society of New York. Potter eventually became one of several American luminaries who signed the original Humanist Manifesto issued in 1933, proclaiming that humankind would learn to face the crisis of life in terms of knowledge of their naturalness and probability. Reasonable attitudes will be fostered by education and supported by custom. Authors of the manifesto explain that religious humanism maintains that all associations and institutions exist for the fulfillment of human life. The essence of good religion, in their estimation, was the potential it held for human fulfillment. Humanism is not the abolition of religion, Reverend Potter insisted, but the beginning of real religion, a religion of common sense. According to him, the ideal humanist is a well-rounded person, informed, keenly intelligent, intuitively developed, emotionally sensitive, but most of all, appreciative of the marvelous depths and heights and infinite possibilities of the human personality. What he recognized, and what we often forget, is that however likely people are to cause problems, they are equally likely to find solutions to them, provided they make full use of their powers of reason. What seems rather fraught is that right now our fears are altogether reasonable. They are grounded in worrisome facts and the experiences of people in other countries confronting the coronavirus pandemic. But we can still maintain a sense of perspective and not succumb to panic. It is our human inclination to become fixated on the worst case scenario. The thinking goes that if we can only master the worst case, then we will have nothing else to fear. As commonsensical as that seems on the surface, it is mostly fantasy. We always have things to fear on all sides of us. And a primary spiritual task for all of us is managing our fears, both large and small, actual and imaginary. Religions have always been means for realizing the highest values of life, the Humanist Manifesto contends. So what are the highest values of our lives? Much as we might like to outwit the world, in the end we cannot. An old friend recently shared an article with me about a man who had amassed nearly 18,000 bottles of hand sanitizer in Tennessee. He had driven around that state buying up those supplies to later sell them online. He said that he had identified inefficiencies in the marketplace when in actuality he had created them by stockpiling supplies that he then marked up massively. Alert to what it called price gouging, the online marketplace where he sold goods removed him as a vendor, accusing him of profiteering during a pandemic. Now he has to sell those goods he procured locally, which seems fair. That area currently has a shortage, and the vendor and everyone he knows is at increased risk of contagion because of that. A wrong was committed here, but the good news is that in relatively short order, a wrong was righted. During times of crisis, we see the best of what humanity is capable of and the worst of what it is capable of, and neither one cancels out the other. Humanist ethics developed to address real moral dilemmas. Individuals are not great at gauging large-scale or long-term consequences. Communities are much better at it, which is why we need them to assert themselves now. The Humanist Manifesto declares that humanists find their religious emotions expressed in heightened sense of personal life and in a cooperative effort to promote social well-being, because humanists are determined to affirm life rather than deny it. They are determined to seek to elicit the possibilities of life, not to flee from them. And they are determined to establish the conditions of a satisfactory life for all, not merely for the few. This global crisis requires a global response from us. Instead of competing for solutions, we need to collaborate with one another in a communitarian spirit. Honestly, none of us, neither the exceedingly optimistic nor the unduly pessimistic, knows exactly what the future holds in coming weeks or months. Our darkest fears may not be realized, and our highest hopes might not either, even after taking all possible precautions. It is important that we not be too convinced of our own forecasts. These are strange days, and measures that would have seemed extreme weeks ago or days ago now seem entirely appropriate. Being reasonable people, we want to stay informed and sensitive to our context. We also need to acknowledge that reasonable people can disagree about issues and frequently do. So we must become willing to accept guidance from one another and seek out each other's counsel as well. Religious humanism is a call to stay humble before life and continuously guard against the idolatries of mind and spirit, including the false positives of our own certainties. During this time of social distancing, it will be especially important for us to maintain a sense of emotional closeness. Let the people you value and love know how much you do. Those of us who can sustain closures, cancellations, and quarantines should, but we should also recognize that not everyone feels they can. The most vulnerable in our midst have very narrow margins to their lives, and anything that shaves away at those leaves them in real jeopardy. Give some thought to them in addition to your own safety. They have choices they need to make. As the late Unitarian minister Walter Moore Argo reminds us, an eternal verity abides beneath diversities. We are children of one great love. Last week, the UUA closed its headquarters offices in Boston until further notice, saying the decision was motivated by a desire to limit the exposure of people in the city as much as to protect its employees. This is a time when we need more ministry and connection with each other, not less, one UUA employee explained. It may just need to take a different form. We are encouraging everyone to use abundant caution, stay in communication, and care for one another. This morning, I want to encourage all of you in this amazing faith community to do the same. Exercise due caution, stay connected, care extravagantly. It simply seems to be what we do here. The Reverend Dr. William Schultz, past president of the UUA, tells us that our faith teaches us to practice the fragile art of hospitality, to revere both the critical mind and the generous heart, and to witness to all that we must hold the whole world in our hands. In these difficult days, I invite each of you to live fully into that faith, whenever you can, however you can. wherever you can. Good religion makes for better living in any situation. That is how we recognize it. During the influenza epidemic of the last century, after he closed the church, Reverend Potter volunteered to serve as an orderly at the local hospital. He desired to make himself useful. The medical care in 1918 was compromised because so many doctors and nurses in the Boston area had been enlisted to serve in World War I, and hospitals were severely short-staffed, especially after medical personnel began contracting the flu themselves. Once the people in the Wellesley Hospital learned that Reverend Potter was a minister, however, they asked him to start acting informally as chaplain, and he agreed. His work had just taken on another form. Being a preacher and not a prognosticator, I cannot tell what form my work, or yours, will take in the coming weeks or months, only that I believe it will be vital. It will matter terribly. We will each be asked to minister to one another's physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health, and we should not shy away from any dimension of that work. At UU Wellesley Hills, albeit remotely, we will be challenged to find innovative ways of serving one another and this community we love. As the days test us, I suspect that we will all be surprised by just how much we eminently reasonable people know by heart.